Ian Haney Lopez is the Chief Justice Earl Warren Professor of Public Law at the University of California, Berkeley. He's also the author of the book Dog Whistle Politics: How Coded Racial Appeals Have Reinvented Racism and Wrecked the Middle Class. Since that book, he has co-founded the Race Class Narrative Project and co-chaired the AFL-CIO's Advisory Council on Racial and Economic Justice. His new book is Merge Left: Fusing Race and Class, Winning Elections, and Saving America. And it's a pleasure to welcome Ian Haney Lopez to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Very glad to join you.
As a law professor at the University of California, Berkeley, where you teach in the areas of race and constitutional law, I guess it makes sense that this was a natural progression for you to look at this fusion.
It really was. You know, I spent a lot of my career thinking about racism as basically a problem of whites versus non-whites. But to really understand what happened in law, what happened with police violence against communities of color, mass incarceration, these things, that really pushed me to shift my thinking and to come to realize that the main impetus behind racism today is not white folks generally. The main impetus are politicians who figured out that they can win votes by promoting racist fears and racist resentments. That is, it's political leaders who are promoting racial division and who are giving sort of racial animosity so much potency today.
What is the motive for that, do you think, for those politicians to do that?
I think the motive originally was to win votes. It's very clear. This starts in 1963. A relatively moderate Republican Party at that time realized that the civil rights movement was, by promoting equality for African Americans, was creating anxiety among whites. And we have the Republican Party in 1963 making the conscious strategic decision that they will appeal to this rising anxiety as a way to fracture the New Deal coalition that kept returning Democrats to power, a New Deal coalition of the white working class, including in the South, African Americans, and liberal whites. And so originally it starts as a way to win votes. But by 1980, it shifts. It takes on this additional motive. Now it's not just going to be used to fracture the New Deal coalition. It's going to be used to undercut New Deal commitments themselves, commitments to an activist government that lifts up working families, that promotes labor, that defends civil rights, that regulates the marketplace, that creates routes of upward mobility, that taxes concentrated wealth and redistributes wealth downward. Those are all the things that came under attack precisely by using racial stories about who threatens America and about why government is a threat, why government itself is a threat in most people's lives.
So, and correct me if I'm wrong here, and to generalize certainly, but it seems that what you have devised and what you and your group have looked to do here is to use many of the successful tools that the right has used, and to use those same tools in the opposite direction to try to coalesce.
I think that's fair, though we should be clear. The tools themselves that we're talking about here are focus groups and national polling. So these are tools that are designed to help hone messages as we seek to communicate with the American public. Nothing particularly untoward about the tools. Here's the big difference. What's been happening is that the party of big business, the Republican Party, in the 1960s figured out, hey, we can use coded appeals to racial anxiety to win votes. We're not going to be explicit about it. We're going to use dog whistles, things like states' rights, forced busing, law and order, thugs, welfare queens, illegal aliens, or the silent majority, the American heartland, to make America great again. None of those terms on their surface refer to race. All of them trigger racist stereotypes. in order to hone those terms, they used focus groups. They used national polling. They put a lot of thought into how precisely to frame their arguments in a way that triggered racial anxiety but allowed them plausible deniability. And what we did is we said, listen, we want to tell a different story. We want to communicate a different story to America. We want to say to America, the real threat in our lives doesn't come from people with different skin colors or unfamiliar surnames. The real threat comes from power elites who intentionally get us fighting each other while they rig the rules of the economy for themselves. Now, that's a complicated story to tell. So in order to tell that story, we use focus groups, we use polling, and here's the astounding thing we found. People were tremendously receptive to this argument. They actually knew it. It's as if they intuited both of the components, we were being intentionally divided, and the system is rigged against us. And what they realized is those two aren't separate components. What our story communicated is, yes, the system is rigged, and the way they're getting away with it is by intentionally dividing us. And by connecting those two, people said, yeah, that's right. That's what's happening to us. And we need to come together if we're actually going to create the sorts of supermajorities we need to make sure government actually works for us and not for corporations.
Is there a way of doing that with bringing down the level of polarization in the sense of, Can we do that without there still being an us versus them?
Well, those two are very different questions. One is, do we need an us versus them? And in a sense, we do. There are people who threaten us. Our society now is at tremendous risk. Our democracy is under threat. Our economy is grossly unfair. We are hurtling towards climate collapse. And the policies of the Trump administration are making things worse. So, you know, it'd be naive to say, hey, you know, we can all get along. We don't have to identify where a threat's coming from. We are under threat. But to identify the threat as coming from greedy politicians and the dark money that bankrolls them is not the same thing as increasing polarization. In fact, the whole point of what I'm calling this merge left approach is to decrease polarization, to really promote the idea that we're all in this together and that elites, greedy elites, Donald Trump is trying to divide us. We need to reject that division. We need to come together. This is a very, very strong call for unity that says, come together. Come together in our confidence and our faith in fellow Americans. Come together by rejecting stereotypes and narratives of racial difference or religious difference. Come together in the sense that we really commit to taking care of each other, because it's only by committing to take care of each other that we can ensure that our own families will have access to a living wage, to pensions, to high quality education, to a survivable environment. It's only when we come together that we can end government violence against communities of color, the sort of violence we see in mass incarceration and mass deportation. So this is very much a message that says, come together by recognizing that the real threat we face is not other Americans, wherever we come from. The real threat we face are a new class of economic titans who deliberately rule by dividing us.
So that division obviously works, and that division, as you've laid out, that division is effective. So given that it's effective and given that it is monetarily effective, then how do you chip away at that so that it ultimately impacts not only an election, but impacts the culture and the society, so that there isn't the money, there isn't that there is an equality there that is true and genuine?
You're asking exactly the right question. You're really by framing this as, hey, this is more than politics. This is culture and society. This is who we are as a people. So let me start with the bad news. Democrats have been getting this wrong for 50 years. they have been getting the response to this intentional division wrong for 50 years. They realized early on that you couldn't turn around and say to Richard Nixon, for example, hey, Richard Nixon, when you talk about law and order and the silent majority, you're being racist. Because many people understood those concerns as common sense, and they felt that they themselves were then being called racist. So that backfires. So then Democrats thought, well, we won't address it at all. We will distance ourselves from people of color and from civil rights. Even that wasn't enough. It certainly wasn't enough to keep Michael Dukakis from losing with the Willie Horton ad. So then Bill Clinton went one step further and he said, we're not just going to stay silent about this. We're going to imitate it. The Democratic Party itself is going to start warning about dangerous people of color. We're going to end welfare as a way of life. We're going to crack down on criminals. That's the so-called New Democrat. Those responses have been a disaster, and they've been a disaster in the sense that the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have both been engaged in a process of increasingly governing as if people of color are the main threat in this society, while also seeking support from Wall Street. That's been the principal dynamic, certainly through the Clinton years. And I'm afraid Barack Obama didn't much reverse that dynamic. He refused to substantively, significantly address race, talk about race less than any president since FDR. And meanwhile, his administration showed more sympathy to protecting Wall Street after the Great Recession than to protecting Main Street. Democrats are currently getting it wrong with these stay silent or call them a racist or imitate. But what we found in our two-year research project is there's a much more powerful and much more effective response that is effective and powerful now, today. And that's this message that says, hey, what's happening is politicians are intentionally dividing us. And when they divide us, they rig the rules. But if we come together, we can make this a society we're happy to leave all of our children, whether we're white, black, or brown. This message, this class-conscious message that is also race-conscious. In order to win, we need to fight racism. This isn't a sort of a colorblind, let's come together by being colorblind. This is, let's come together by fighting racism. And when we come together by fighting racism, we can make this the society we want. That's not only an effective political message, That's a foundational statement about who we are as a country. We as a country have as a de facto national motto, out of many, one, e pluribus unum. That is our foundational aspiration. We have struggled to achieve that, to make that real. We are on the cusp of the next big advance in making real the national aspiration that out of many, we will be one, and that requires that we address and tackle racial division head on. And the way to do that is to recognize that racial division is a weapon that's being used by a new economic titan against all the rest of us.
The name of the book is Merge Left, Fusing Race and Class, Winning Elections and Saving America. The book is published by The New Press. Ian Haney Lopez is the author. Thank you very much, Ian, for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Merge Left, Fusing Race and Class, Winning Elections and Saving America. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.